following is a production of Shark Flight Media. Shark Flight Media. Shark Flight Media.
Now entering the nexus of geekery and guy world in 3, 2, 1. Mark.
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again?
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
This is the Dudes in Hyperspace podcast.
Hey, kids, welcome back for another exciting edition of the Dudes in Hyperspace podcast. I am your host, Ian J. Malone, joined as always by my partners in crime, Rob Howe, Kevin Steverson. Going to get to those two fine gentlemen in a second. But before we do, let's pay some bills. Got to give a huge shout out to our title presenting sponsor. That would, of course, be Chris Kennedy Publishing. Not sure what you're into. It's military, science fiction, space opera, fantasy. Heck, even if you just fancy yourself a writer and you want some literature on the craft and getting better at that, they've got it covered for you. Chris Kennedy Publishing, you can find everything you need to know about them online at chriskennedypublishing.com. They are Chris Kennedy Publishing, message-free sci-fi with a slice of fantasy. So lots of great stuff to get into tonight. Got a great guest for our headline topic. Lots of stuff happening around the world of sports, around the world of writing, around the world of geekdom. It's just a plethora of things happening abound. So with that, I'll go ahead and bring in Kevin and Rob. Gents, how are we doing this evening? How'd we have a good weekend? What's going on?
Hey, we had a good one. Had a little storm come through here in Georgia yesterday. That was exciting. Knocked a few trees down a couple miles from my house.
Yeah,
Other than that, it's all good.
I'm not even gonna lie, man. When I got the message from you, I'm like, hey, sorry for the delay, but you know, we just had a tornado roll through here, but we're all fine here. I was kind of like, oh, well, that's not quite the response that I expected when I sent said message. Rob, what's happening in KC, man?
Oh, not much. Not that kind of weather today, although we get it often enough. I'm rolling out of a fantastic weekend. I love the draft weekend. It's one of my sort of national holiday weekends that I always sort of book time to wallow in the game theory and the fun that goes on through the draft.
Nice. Well, I got to tell you, man, I hate to sound like the quintessential old fart and talking about the weather, but I kind of have to when it's 72 and sunny with zero humidity in North Carolina. I was a grilling fool this past weekend. Seriously, we had burgers going on Saturday. I did some barbecue ribs on Sunday for the Kansas NASCAR race. Like it was a fine sports weekend between the draft, between NASCAR, Cincinnati Reds took the series versus the Cubs. Just about done to put a short story in the can. Like it was production on a whole crazy level. So, all right, well, listen, let's go ahead and get on down to our big topic of the night. We obviously teased this in our last episode, talked a lot about it. That is the NFL draft. That is a very big thing to everyone in this room, whether it's Kevin and his Falcons, me and the Buccaneers, Rob and his Cowboys. We enjoy the league from top to bottom. We are fans of the game, fans of the sport, fans of the shield. And the NFL draft is historically one of the biggest weekends that we look forward to every year. We did not think you guys wanted to hear us bloviate again with another NFL draft review, so my man Rob here went to the mattresses, brought ourselves in a guest. So, Rob, I'm going to go ahead and throw it to you. Who do we got, man? Who are we talking to this evening?
We're talking to Bob Sturm. I read his stuff on The Athletic regularly. He's one of the best writers on The Athletic, and that's saying something because The Athletic has a ton of great writers. I also occasionally will pop in and listen to him on the radio in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, thanks to the various different radio apps there are. So thanks for joining us, Bob.
Pleasure being with you, and thanks for having me.
You are one of my favorite writers on the draft, and one of the reasons I appreciate you is because of the top 60 that you do, which is a little bit more in-depth look at prospects than most writers give us. And again, I think The Athletic gives you the format to do that.
Yes.
So how long have you been doing draft coverage, just out of curiosity?
Well, on the radio, it was a pretty early thing, long before I knew what I was even looking at. It's weird when you're in this business. They put you on things, and you just try to learn how to swim on your own. So probably over 20 years, maybe 24 or so. But I really started trying to pursue knowledge that I did not already have in the last 16 or so years, about 2005. I got frustrated that the sport I love the most is one that I don't feel like I understand at a satisfactory level, because I think the media for years talk about sports on a fantasy football level, but every time we would talk to football people, they were speaking a different language, and that's what I really wanted to learn about. So I guess the long, short answer, which anyone who knows me knows I don't really have a short answer, is you know, I really started trying to learn football at an all-new level probably about 2005.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, and I totally agree with you. The it's fascinating to me with people like Duke Manyweather and others on Twitter, for example, and I'm watching them talk about offensive line theory, and my mind is starting to get blown as I've learned so many aspects to such subtleties in the game.
Right.
So you've been doing this process for 16 years, and you put out the 60, so what's changed in the time, because even in just 16 years, the NFL has dramatically evolved. What's changed in your process? What have you added? What have you paid less attention to?
I think the Sturm 60, if you will, is more of a, it's probably coming up on its decade birthday. And really what I got frustrated with, both with me and people in this business, is that there were too many people covering the draft who didn't know what they were talking about. And basically, I thought the best way to learn about players is to study them yourself, not to read out of magazines, not to let someone else do the homework. Even if they're a bigger expert than you, the best way for you to learn the players is to put the thought in and the effort in yourself. So my process is I cover the Cowboys all year, but when they are eliminated from their season, regular season or playoffs, then I start a 12-week process, and each weekday, 12 times 5 is 60, and each weekday I will grab a player I don't know anything about in many cases, but a panel that doesn't even know they're part of the panel, pretty much helped me determine the 50 or 60 prospects that are most connected to the possibility of the Cowboys taking them. I know that's an obscure path, but so each morning I'll grab 3 games of whoever the player of the day is, and I do have a bit of a method there, but then you're pretty much just studying that player through 3 games or about 200 snaps. And it's possible I'm not grabbing the proper 200, but I try to pick their difficult opponents, their biggest games, and I try to study them that way. And so what's changed? What's changed is I think I've gotten better because, you know, when you talk about 10 years and 60 a year, now I'm up to 600 guys I've studied. Many of them populate the league at very high levels of prominence. And I learn from mistakes. You know, when I was just starting, there were things I would, you know, focus on and think they're important, and then find out as their careers are going on that, well, maybe that wasn't that important. So it's like anything else, guys. You attempt to learn a methodology that makes sense intuitively to you, and then you keep testing it against itself. And sooner or later, you either quit or you think you're way better than you once were, which also, you know, risks the hubris of guys in my profession thinking they're actually as good at this or better than the people that do it for a living. I think that's probably a pretty dangerous part of the media, but I can only control myself, I guess.
Well, that's certainly true. We can only control ourselves. But I'm listening to your talking about your process there on this, and then I'm going back to my own writing process. Mm-hmm. We're all writers here of science fiction and fantasy, and you know, we keep learning as we keep finding new techniques and incorporating them and getting, trying to eliminate past mistakes.
Yeah.
It's always a challenge. So we're done with the 2021 draft. We'll get into that more here in a moment, but there's already mock drafts for 2022.
Yes, sir.
Isn't that a little crazy? First of all, I think that's kind of crazy.
Well, it's crazy, but I guess there are many people now, and this didn't exist 20 years ago for sure, but there are many people now that's their full-time gig, and the internet has allowed people to make that their full-time gig, that they don't even really cover football like I do. The games and the teams in the NFL, but their specialty is the draft. And so it's pretty wild that they've been able to carve that niche for themselves, but I guess good on them. Find something that, you know, the market will support and then keep going. So I think that's pretty wild that, yes, I've seen those two. People did not even let the dust settle from this year, and they're already telling us who is likely to be first-rounders next year.
So one of my favorite draft resources is almost exactly that guy you talked about, and that's Dane Brugger, who I really admire.
Yeah, he's unbelievable.
Who else besides yourself and Dane, who, you know, we're getting ready for the 2022 draft. It's early April of 22. Who else are you suggesting we should be looking at that point?
Well, you know, there's a bunch of less prominent names on Twitter, and we like everybody else, have our own little community, and I certainly value a lot of their opinions, but they all have, like, specialties, right? So as you mentioned, Duke, he's an offensive line guy, but there's also defensive back guy, there's defensive line guy, there's wide receiver guy. So all those people are out there in their own little niche world, and many of them played that position. I should tell people, I never played a down. I've been watching football since I was probably in first grade. But I went to a little private school that didn't even have a football program, which is its own side story. That's probably not interesting enough to pursue. But, you know, the guys at the top are great. Daniel Jeremiah is probably one of the best. Dane Brugler is unbelievable. There are people, at various levels along the way. I think, obviously, Todd McShay and Mel Kiper at ESPN have been doing this a long time, and Bucky Brooks and Mike Mayock before he got hired by Las Vegas. And see, that's something interesting, too. The people in the media that cover the draft, including Dane Brugler, I would not be shocked in the slightest if those guys end up working in NFL front offices soon enough. And that's the cool thing about sports. I don't know how true that is in other fields, but more and more and more people who create content, and obviously people much younger than me that probably don't have kids my age who need to pay for college pretty quick here. But, all around, these people are actually getting a chance to sit at the table with the big boys and actually get in front offices in these various sports. And I find that fascinating.
I do too. I have to say that obviously I'm an outsider from the NFL's perspective, but when I watched the Cowboys draft show with Brugger all of these, names get brought up. I mean, Nashon Wright is a perfect example. When he popped up on there and everybody else is going, who? And he's like, well, this is where I got him, and this is what I saw, and all these things. And his list is so comprehensive. It's really impressive.
Yes.
So let's start into the draft. And since you are a Cowboys writer, I'm going to start with Cowboys. My personal favorite two picks for the Cowboys are Jabril Cox and Semi Fihoko. The value at those two, fourth and fifth, I think, for Semi, I thought was really nice. So what were some of your favorites in the Cowboys draft?
Well, I certainly think Kelvin Joseph is probably not too far off the trail in terms of maybe that's an obvious pick, but I think the Cowboys got themselves a real nice player there. Certainly there are aspects and components of his personal life and his rap career and things that make some people nervous, but I really think all in all that he can really help make this defense better. And I just in general find him, a very impressive prospect. I love Jabril Cox. Think he's fantastic. Quentin Bohanna is the big man in the middle that the Cowboys have been needing for a while. So I'm certainly an enthusiast of his, and I'm interested in seeing more from Odighizuwa and Golston in the third round. Those defensive linemen that really potentially fill a spot for the Cowboys. And of course Parsons at the top. So I've probably given you several names there and didn't totally answer the question like you preferred. But if you did pin me down, I would probably take the two Kentucky guys, who are at drastically different spots in the draft. One was pick 44 and one was pick 192, but they both represent guys who I think can step right in and really play a role for this team quickly.
The two Kentucky guys being Joseph and Bohanna, and I like them too. I am a fan of Antoine Woods, but I think Bohanna can be a younger, cheaper version of that. And sadly, and that's the NFL.
Yeah, he just has more length and perhaps more functional versatility there, I think.
So let's shift to the Falcons, who are Kevin's team.
Okay.
And I thought the Falcons had a really good draft, and my favorite pick there was Jalen Mayfield in the third. That seems like a heck of a tackle to get at that point in the draft.
Yeah, you know, he has a chance. I preferred several other tackles along the way. He has the ability. He just needs the consistency, and sometimes that develops a little bit later. I really like Richie Grant, and I know Atlanta is completely making over their safety position, and he is a guy at Central Florida who is a little bit older, and sometimes that hurts draft value, but I think overall people will be pretty pleased with the way he sees the play in front of him, which is, you know, probably the most important thing that a safety is capable of. And you know, the Kyle Pitts decision, there's a couple teams high in the draft that you could debate should they be passing on a quarterback. And Atlanta with Matt Ryan at this point of his career, it's kind of interesting, you know, with Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson and Matthew Stafford all having their unique late in career, kind of watching Tom Brady, kind of wondering what's next. The Falcons and Matt Ryan kind of tied at the hip with that contract, and so they're going to get him Kyle Pitts with Calvin Ridley and Julio, and they're gonna try to, you know, outscore teams this year. So we'll see if that works. Arthur Smith looks like a pretty solid hire, and you know, I don't hate the decision, but you know, the Ohio State kid Justin Fields, who Chicago ended up with, I have questions about several teams letting him down the board, because I thought he was the second best quarterback in this draft.
I agree. I looked at Denver passing on him to take Surtain, and I'm like, this is a quarterback, guys. In fact, one of my questions to you is, Justin Fields the third best quarterback in Chicago Bears history now?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, he has a real chance, and the bar is low. With all due respect to the Bears fans, they have a proud franchise, but somehow, and I'm 47. But I'll tell you, I'm 48. I don't even know how old I am. That's crazy. But I'm 48 years old, and I can't begin to tell you the guy who I would say is the best Bears quarterback of my lifetime. I guess it's Jim McMahon. I guess.
I think McMahon's number two ever, only because he didn't screw up 1985.
Yeah, and you know, before that, you got Sid Luckman, who is well before I was born. And you know, my dad will tell me about Bobby Douglas, who most people have probably not heard of, and you know, then you're pretty much scraping the bottom with Jay Cutler, and so to your point, it won't take much for this guy to quickly capture that entire city.
Yeah, I'm ecstatic for Chicago fans, because this is so, to your point, there are several teams along the way there that could have had Fields and passed on him, and the Bears didn't pay. I mean, yeah, they gave up a first rounder next year, but the King's ransom, some teams pay, like for example, the 49ers to get to three, can be ridiculous sometimes. So I thought that was pretty interesting myself.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you mentioned it, the Broncos in particular. It's really something that they wanted a corner in front of a quarterback. Now, they may have an Aaron Rodgers deal done that they can't announce till June 1st. I highly, highly doubt it, given the rhetoric from Green Bay. But if the Broncos have a better idea, great. But if they really thought that Surtain is a better idea than one of the best quarterbacks to come down in a long time, I really question that personally.
I do too. Since you brought it up, and I know you're from Wisconsin, and Green Bay was your first team, right? Is that correct?
Oh yeah. In fact, I I won't misrepresent. I cover the Cowboys for a living, but if there was a team that I have a tattoo for, I named my son Brett. I on my wall, I have a certificate of ownership for one of their shares of stock. So yes, I am forever born and bred and will probably die a cheesehead. That's right.
So tell me, I tend to think that all the stuff about Aaron Rodgers right now is media created to get a cool story, but it's keeping on, and it seems to be gathering some legs. And I wonder, do you think there's as much to that as keeps getting tossed about?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I'd love to fully agree with you that it's a media creation, but at a certain point, it seems it's too many places, and he certainly has every chance to swat it down, and he does not. So he's upset. Now, if you are like me and you live through the Brett Favre soap opera, then two things are true. One, you understand that it's possible. And two, nothing can really hurt you that much anymore because you've already been hurt with the Favre thing, who he was the guy in my most impressionable years. And so, honestly, both of them gave Green Bay 16 years. It's an extremely difficult place to live in for about 10 reasons, but we could just simply say because of the weather and the size of the city. Anybody spending 16 years there, especially if they are not a native Wisconsinite, I almost say, you know what? You give me your best for 16 years, and then we will try to break up peacefully. And I don't want him to go anywhere, but I at least have to say I understand the concept since I now live in Texas and as far away from winter as possible. So it would be hypocritical for me to say I don't understand a guy wanting to live his life in a place that's a little more pleasant than a city of 100,000 who frequently sits below zero.
As a Cowboys fan who wasn't quite yet born for the Ice Bowl, I've still never gotten over that game.
Well, you're not alone, and I've been up there in several games where it was not quite that cold, but I did go to one where my dad, I never got to Lambeau Field until I got my own job, and then once I got my own job, my goal was to take my dad several times, and the last time I took him was 2008, and the game was actually that time at Soldier Field in Chicago, but it was Packers-Bears, and it was so cold and so windy and so miserable that he looked at me and said, "This is my last game."
And wow.
I made him sit through it. I think the wind chill that day was about 20 below, and the wind chill at the Ice Bowl, I think, was about 48 below. And if you've never felt freezing sub-zero wind like that for hours at a time to watch a football game, then I recommend you just read about it and don't actually try to live it because it's insane.
I have, in fact, read about it a number of times. One of my favorite books is Instant Replay, the yep. Jerry Kramer diary of that year. And his description of that game is fairly vivid.
No doubt.
All right, so let's get back to the 2021 draft, and I'm not a huge Kyle Trask fan, but he went to Tampa Bay, which is Ian's team. Mm-hmm. Do you think he's, give us some reasons why he might be successful as Brady's successor?
Wow, that is a question because I am a bit pessimistic on whether he actually has starting capability, but I will say in watching one of his best performances, the game at Texas A&M that the Gators ended up losing, but it wasn't his fault. I would say it's worth a look. It's certainly not, a top five quarterback in this draft. But, of course, as everybody knows, neither was Tom Brady. In fact, he wasn't even a top 10 quarterback in his draft. And there's several guys like that. Dak Prescott here is a great example of you just don't know. And you're looking for leadership and qualities that make you a great leader of men. He doesn't have a rocket arm. And there are some things in his game he's got to clean up. But, you know, I don't hate the pick at all. There's a couple guys. In fact, the other quarterback in that A&M Florida game, Kellen Mond, going to Minnesota. These are guys who you are thinking, if we're lucky, he's a good backup quarterback. But maybe, you know, let him develop. And I've just been studying Russell Wilson in college recently. There's a program I've been listening to about Russ leaving NC State for Wisconsin back in the day, and nobody, including his own coach at NC State, thought he was going to sniff the NFL. And I would argue that Russell Wilson's one of the 3 to 5 best quarterbacks of this decade in the NFL. So people don't know until a guy gets a chance. And then if guys follow you into battle and will fight for you, maybe, just maybe, you can scrap your way along. So I don't hate them giving that one a shot. Why not?
Bob, if I could cut in here really quick, I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I remember the whole Russell Wilson versus Mike Glennon fiasco.
Yes, sir.
And how that basically got Tom O'Brien fired.
Right.
So, So not one of their finest moments there.
No.
But back to the Trask thing. I'm with you on that. We covered this in our kind of our preview show with that topic, and that came up because not only am I a Bucs fan, but I'm a Florida State alum. So, you know, the whole Gator Nation thing, how was I going to deal with that? And I'll tell you what I told the guys. You know, I certainly did not like the pick at all in the first round. In the second round, all right. You know, I'll let you take the flyer.
Right.
If you think he's got something that, you know, that could be molded down the line, then great. My only issue with this particular scenario is that you get to learn behind Tom Brady.
Yeah.
And frankly, I would like to see somebody that has a little bit more upside and frankly has a little bit more of a chance of developing into something special, be able to take advantage of that circumstance of being able to sit in that film room with that player and learn how processes the game. I would much rather see somebody other than Kyle Trask sitting in that chair. But that's who they took, so be it.
Well, and I'll tell you, this year in particular, since he went to Tampa, I had a chance to be exposed to Tom quite a bit through one of my other jobs with Fox. And we never did many Brady games. But this year, Troy Aikman and Joe Buck did a number of Brady games, of course. And I got a chance to, you know, hear some many off-the-record conversations and just the way he sees the game, the way he talks the game, the way he cusses like a very talented sailor. And and I've been so wrong about Tom Brady for so long that it's a bit disingenuous to come around on a guy after he turns 40, but I've greatly grown in respect for him because, you know, there was a while where I thought, you know, propped up by the system and all that, but there can be no question anymore. That dude is the real deal.
I think that's absolutely proven this year, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And so let's get to one of the more exciting picks, I think, for Tampa Bay. The North Texas kid, Jalen Darden, ended up there. It's a crowded wide receiver room, but that could be really fun for Brady or whoever follows him.
Yeah, it could be. I'll tell you what, for those who aren't familiar with Jalen Darden, it is insane what that kid is capable of. He is the tiniest, and I do mean that in a game that is now allowing the little guy to perform. If you haven't seen 5'8", probably 160 if he's lucky. I know he's listed like at 173, but it's like a little kid won a contest and he gets to go out there and play. And that's at the North Texas level. So at the NFL, it's going to probably elicit laughter at times because he looks impossibly tiny out there in this sea of big men. Like Tyreek Hill for the Chiefs is chiseled. So he is small, but he at least looks like he has a build that is sturdy enough to take the beating. I'm curious if Jalen can get hit at that level repeatedly and be fine, but the beauty is it's hard to hit him. He's one of the most elusive human beings that you will ever see. And I imagine while the Buccaneers have plenty of targets, that the volume will not go his way at first. I expect he'll be a gadget player, and I expect he will have a little development time. But what a fun exciting player that breaks ankles in the open field. So I know the Buccaneers didn't need more weapons, but they got one. And everyone in North Texas is pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I think they should be. It's a fun story. And I think some wide receiver screens to Mike Evans' side could be some interesting things to watch.
Oh, yeah.
So that should be fun.
Yes, I totally agree with that.
So this is more of sort of a couple more general questions on the draft. Sure. A buddy of mine, when we were watching the draft together, thought he saw a pattern where teams preferred local players more than usual. J.C. Horn going to Carolina, Nick Bolton going to Kansas City, and there were others. I didn't do a study, and I have no idea if that's just cherry-picking a couple of things I saw. But I wonder if the travel limitations increased regional biases in this draft. Would we, for example, have a better feel for Nashon Wright if East Coast media had seen him play more, that sort of a thing? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't think it's impossible because I definitely frequently talk with scouts, and they have told me on a number of occasions that it's been a frustrating couple of years for them to do their due diligence, and that involves a number of in-person visits to schools and also the ability to bring players in on 30 visits or Dallas Day or all the ways they go about making sure that they know who the player is. So I don't believe that of the 250 picks that we have too many cases of local attachments, but I would also say it's probably higher than normal because teams are going on what they know. And what they know are relationships inside the building. I think that's the trend that can't be denied, is that there are a number of college teammates joining their old buddies from college at the pro level. Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, the Alabama situation with Tua. You look all over the place. Trevor Lawrence and ATN. The players that know other players are definitely being contacted about, will you vouch for this guy, or coach connections. So they have to be creative. A Zoom call only takes you so far. And I do think that they are using whatever they can do. And it does stand to reason that many of your personal relationships that might give you an in inside a college program probably are more localized. So I don't know if anyone's put pen to paper on your theory, but I'd be interested in looking into it more.
Yeah, it's something that really does seem like it could be computed. Obviously we have those 30 day draft visits that are all localized that we didn't have this year, which the guys on the Cowboys draft show were lamenting, because of course those are breadcrumbs for them to sort of predict some of the 5th, 6th, and 7th round picks.
Not only that, but that's a huge advantage for Dallas and a few other teams who enjoy, a density of professional athletes or prospective professional athletes that live in their 50-mile radius. I can tell you the Green Bay doesn't have that problem. You can go within 50 miles of Green Bay in every direction, and you'll either find a bunch of deer or Lake Michigan. So Dallas, Houston, Miami, there are definitely regional areas that benefit from a Dallas Day where you can have local products by without using a visit. But it's definitely limited to probably 10 or so southern markets, much more than the northern side.
That makes a lot of sense. You mentioned Houston. Does that franchise have any hope? Davis Mills, that poor kid there, I can't imagine he's going to have any chance to succeed with the mess that's in Houston right now.
They have built themselves quite a mess. I can't believe a worse off season, to be honest. That's on top of a couple very ill-advised trades by Bill O'Brien before he got fired. And gosh, the Deshaun Watson thing, what do you say about that? And it's one thing for a kid to ask for a trade, but It's another for him then to show up in all manner of civil proceedings, and who knows where that goes from here. So Houston probably will rise again at some point, but they are definitely taking the elevator to the very bottom of the NFL right now, and it'll be tough to get out of there in the short term.
It certainly didn't help that you talk about the ill-advised trades. They had three picks, I believe, and the first one was in the third round.
Yeah.
That's just not the way to build a team.
No, just a complete disaster, to be honest.
So let's talk about a team that seems to be doing really well. The Browns seem to be doing well and building a roster that's pretty stocked. Do you think this draft, which I thought was a really good draft for the Browns, put them in the range of the Chiefs, who I also think had a pretty good draft, really solidified their offensive line?
Yeah, you know, Cleveland's one of those teams that has just about all the pieces that they need. There's no doubt that they have very few weaknesses on the field. And so for them to go add a bunch more defensive pieces as they continue to try to build that to a you know, top 10 D that can sustain, and clearly adding Clowney earlier in the season to Miles Garrett is crazy. That could work out very well for them. They've got a lot going for them. Whether they can deal with Kansas City or Tampa Bay or any of the heavyweights in the league will, of course, come back to Baker Mayfield. And there are times where he looks the part of a guy who can measure up to those tests, and there are other times where he looks potentially like the one who might be holding them back. So last year, with Kevin Stefanski, they have installed an offense that sort of takes more away from the quarterback and makes it more play action, makes it more run heavy, makes it more of a offense that does not rely on the quarterback at a super high level. You still are relying on your quarterback, but you're just trying to, you know, move the shifters a little bit on the board so that you're not counting on him for everything. And maybe that will work, but I think that's probably the biggest question moving forward. That and, you know, the fact that they can no longer sneak up on anybody because people now are well aware when the Browns are coming to town.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I do think that Mayfield has a chance to be a really good quarterback in a San Francisco type, that running yep. offense. I guess also the Los Angeles, the McVay offense, we could call it as well.
Yes.
That has ripped up the Cowboys a couple of times of late. All right, so let's throw this out to in general. What were some of your favorite picks of the draft?
Well, that's interesting. Because that can mean so many different things. But I will say it doesn't, you know, it's not necessarily something I love to admit. But those NFC North bunk mates with Green Bay all did very, very well. In particular, for Detroit to get Penei Sewell and to continue to build what has been a mess up there on the line of scrimmage makes some sense. My buddy Dan Campbell is now their coach, and so they, you know, I guess they're technically a rival, but are the Lions really anyone's rival? I guess that's the key for them to get legitimate, is they just got to put some years together. But it starts with, you know, moving Stafford out and starting over. So I think Penei Sewell is brilliant for them. And then, you know, I not to repeat a general thought, but once Chicago saw their chance to pounce and to go get Justin Fields, that's absolutely fantastic. I like what Washington did with Jamin Davis. I think that could really help them behind that massive, massive offensive line. And, you know, depending on the scheme and what they settle on and what they ask him to do, I really think Christian Barmore falling to 38 to New England is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I would not have had any problem with the Cowboys jumping on him if they were to trade back from 12 again. Maybe at 12 it's a little rich, but I could have still been talked into that possibility. I think Parsons is a better player, though. There's no question about that. But if they would have dropped back again, if they might have been had a chance at that Chicago trade, that's probably who I would have recommended at number 20. And beyond that, there's a couple guys who could go either way. Walker Little at Jacksonville at 44 is really interesting to me. And then, of course, I think everybody is quite curious to see what Dylan Radunes, the big tackle from North Dakota State, might do at Tennessee. It's up and down the draft. You study these guys, you learn, you hope they find a good home, and you hope they're developed properly. So I could go on, but there's a handful for you.
That's a great list of handfuls. I also like the fact that Detroit got a couple of nice defensive tackles, and it's a very Dan Campbell always seemed like such a solid guy. Obviously, you know him, but from what I saw as a tight end at Dallas and then in his coaching career, he just seemed like Mr. Dependable, and it sounds like he's trying to create a core in Detroit that is also Mr. Dependable, and that's not a bad place for them to go.
You know, I think it just starts with pride in what they do, and I know that sounds a little corny, but I think he wants to make Detroit a place that feels good about themselves and people want to play there, and they've lost that over the years. Like, Detroit is a place you can't wait to get out of if you're a football player. So he wants them to kind of fight for each other and build something. He's a Parcells guy, so it will be physical, but at the same time, he's been working for Sean Payton for years. Another Parcells guy, but a guy who will throw it 55 times a game if you let him. So there are ways to skin a cat, and this game continues to evolve.
That's absolutely true. You talked about the morale question there in Detroit. Napoleon said, of course, that the morale is physical is 10-1. And I look at the NFL and I think when we're talking differences in athletes, even from top to bottom, they are working on such slim margins. That extra tenth of a second in the 40 might very well make a difference. But also that tenth of a second that you put into the energy of being confident and going after things, I think, makes a difference as well. And there's no doubt to me that there are teams that have outperformed their physical level of talent simply because their morale was so much better than their opponents.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes that can also permeate in just preparation.
Absolutely.
In understanding what you're supposed to do, what your teammates are supposed to do, and just having, you know, just a mental advantage, and we see that quite a bit. So I do think, to circle all the way back to what have I learned over the years, it would be to not completely discount the testing scores and the importance of being able to measure things, but also not to do what so many of my younger colleagues do, and that is, almost every guy who starts evaluating football players gets tripped up early by discounting intangibles and things that are very difficult for us to measure still, and putting all their eggs into 40 times and bench press and vertical jump. It's part of the recipe, but it's not the whole thing.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I've felt that way for some time. I'm a big fan of sabermetrics and studying, you know, more advanced metrics to get a better idea, but I'm well aware that there are things that can't always be answered by those tools.
Yeah, and I think both sides would do better to kind of understand that concept. Like the if there are two sides, the old scout who's out there with a stopwatch and is in his notepad, and then the analytics side. I consider myself a centrist because I think both have incredible value and very talented people in them, and I would just I would love a world where we could do a better job of melding those two premises together, because we need them both to get players right.
I absolutely agree with you. Actually, that's one of the reasons I kind of like to circle back to the Dallas Cowboys draft show, which I watched the entire draft. The fact is that Jeff Kavanaugh has some pretty clear biases, but so does Brian Broaddus, and the two of them working off each other with the research that Dane Brugler provides is a really nice contrast, to be honest, when I'm watching that.
Sure, yeah, and I know all those guys, and I owe Brian a ton, and he really helped me early on, and I feel like I was probably the the first media guy in his program. I know Kavanaugh's followed me down the road and a few other people, but back 12 years ago, right when he was done scouting for the Cowboys, he really helped me along and opened the door. Probably more than that now that I think about it. Probably 06 was probably his first year out in the wild, and I owe him a ton.
Well, I've certainly enjoyed watching him throughout the years on the draft show and then on the various other shows on DallasCowboys.com. But let's thanks for that part. Really, sure. That's a great coverage of the draft. I'd like to turn to you a little bit, if we may, and picture some of your other interests.
Okay.
So, first of all, since we're a writing blog or a writing podcast, tell me about your writing process and how did it change when you got to The Athletic, if at all?
That's interesting. It probably changed that they have editors. when I wrote for the Dallas Morning News, I was pretty much hitting publish on all my stuff, so it really wasn't getting edited, and it probably looks like that. And that's just, you know, they weren't totally into, you know, I guess they weren't into spending to edit digital copies. And by the way, they also weren't spending to pay people very well at the time I was there. No disrespect, but there's a reason I ended up at The Athletic, and most of it fits in a wallet, although I love working for them very much. But, you know, my writing process is honestly, I wanted to be a writer first, and I went to college thinking I would be a sports writer. And then quickly kind of found out that it takes a while to work your way to the NFL as a writer at a paper, because when you start, they're going to give you the lowest on the totem pole, which is usually like high school volleyball matches, and you're supposed to go write about those. And I suppose I didn't have the patience to go through that, and I found out how much fun and sports radio was, and how easily you can pretty much set your own topics. And so you never have to talk about high school volleyball. You can just go right to the NFL and, you know, whatever you want to talk about whenever you please, as long as you get ratings. So that worked out well for me. But when I got to a certain point in radio, I guess my mind wandered a little bit, and I wanted to start, like I said earlier, learning about the game of football at an all-new level and then writing about what I learned. And so I returned to my initial love of writing as sort of a side gig to, I guess, keep me entertained and engaged. And I was doing it by myself or for myself and for free. And people started reading it. And I had a, you know, Blogspot blog, I guess, back in 06, maybe I started. And I just started writing down things that I, you know, wanted to discuss on the air. And then I started trying to turn it into written pieces that people could enjoy and read, and it found a niche. It's not for everyone. It's very football nerdy, I guess. It's X's and O's, and it's stuff that makes a lot of football fans glaze over because they don't want to turn football into a, you know, college subject for them. A class. They just want to enjoy themselves and have a beer or something. And I don't blame them. But that just didn't stimulate me at all. So I kind of started writing about what I cared about, and that allowed me to find an audience of fellow nerds, I guess. And that's always been my voice and always been my audience. And so I'm positive I've gotten way better at the mechanics of writing and the method of I like to get up early in the morning and have a quiet house and a little coffee and just get at it and probably be done writing by 9 or 10 in the morning on days I write, but that 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. is where I do my best work. And, you know, other times you got to be a dad, you got to be a husband, the house is loud, you got places to go. So I kind of need quiet and open space. And so that works for me first thing in the morning. But my recommendation to anybody is, you know, write because it's something that's in you, and certainly don't do it for the clicks or the likes or even the dollars at first, because you'll be disappointed probably. But just keep grinding, and maybe you find your audience, and that's I'm very fortunate to do it, especially fortunate since it really isn't my main gig. It's one that, you know, I kind of happened upon, and I did have a bucket list idea that someday I'd like to write a book, and I did, and it's certainly not the most popular book, but it was about a story very important to me, which is the 2011 Dallas Mavericks title. And I wrote it, and I realized that I've never done anything in life that required so many hours and so few dollars. It really didn't pay off. But as I look up at my shelf, I can see a copy of my book, and so therefore I can check that off the bucket list. And I'm very proud it exists, even if only a few thousand people have ever read it, because I had no idea how to do distribution, to be honest.
Well, I understand that completely. I remember finishing my first novel, and I self-published it and made a ton of mistakes. It's a learning process, of course.
Yes.
And that one hasn't succeeded as much as some of my other works, of course. But I do remember that moment when I finally had a copy in my hand and I realized I had finally done something concrete. There's this physical thing in my hand that I have done. And that was a pretty special moment for me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I walked into a Barnes & Noble and saw my book. And I try not to brag, but that was a pretty big moment. That was really cool.
That would be a huge moment for me. Most of us in the science fiction world don't see that. We see our books print on demand, but yeah. Most of our sales these days are e-books and through Kindle, the Kindle reading program. And
well, I'm
stuff
happy
like
I don't
that.
Have to explain to some people what a bookstore is yet. I'm sure that day is coming very quickly, but most people still at least have heard of Barnes & Noble, so we got that going for us so far.
I suspect that there will be people creating a new business model with bookstores.
Yes.
I have several in mind that piggyback on the print-on-demand idea, so that you can walk out with a book that you actually have printed while you're waiting there, reading an e-version and getting your coffee. I think that's something like that's going to be coming down the pike for a pretty consistent availability for most people. So since we are science fiction and fantasy authors, kind of curious what your tastes are in that in those genres. What kind of stuff do you like in science fiction and fantasy?
Well, okay. So I thought about this question, and I'm just going to be honest with you guys. I have two science fiction things that I'm pretty into, and maybe even a third. But the two that are big, of course, as a 48-year-old dude, I am absolutely obsessed with the Star Wars world, and that's been consistent since I was a little kid, and I'm sure that elicits some eye rolls from the science fiction community, but because that is the most basic thing you can be. But given that I've spent 40 years and passed it on to my kids, I will always you know, make sure that I get a word in for that universe that's meant so much. And you know, also because I'm basic, the Game of Thrones stuff, both book and the series was great. But I'm really into time travel stuff. And so now, again, this is mostly me chasing the movies than it is necessarily having authors or anything that I would necessarily be real fluent in, guys. But I would say, like, the movie Primer, which I'm sure you guys know all about, is a movie I've spent a lot of time thinking about and rewatching. And then, you know, even the stuff from Christopher Nolan, like Inception and Tenet, the movie Looper, you know, some of these movies that really crank on your head's ability to comprehend how all this works together. That's the type of stuff I'm really into, and I have to assume that time travel stuff falls under the heading of science fiction.
It totally does, and I was thinking as you were saying that it's much like what you like about football, all the intricate parts moving together to create something more than just the sum of those parts.
Yeah, I could definitely still use you guys breaking down Tenet so I can understand it a little better, because that one made my head hurt to an all new level. But maybe someday it will totally click for me.
Well, maybe we'll do a show on that. I can't break it down for you. I don't know it very well myself.
It's crazy, all right, man.
So we've actually gone for much longer than I anticipated. And so I think it's about time for me to let you go. I'll ask one whimsical type question here, and then we'll let you go. Who's your favorite Muppet?
Oh, Animal. Isn't that everybody's favorite Muppet?
He's certainly one of mine. I think mine are the two guys up in the balcony, Statler
and
Waldorf.
Okay, that's fair. And also an affinity for Rolf, the piano player, right?
Is that yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I mean, I come from a Muppet family. My parents celebrated the Muppet Show when I was a kid, and I really got into it. Of course, the Muppet Christmas Carol is a tradition. So my wife is anti-Muppet, and we try not to let that ruin our marriage, but I am pro-Muppet, so that's that works out very well for me. But I'm an Animal guy.
That makes sense. All right, so before we let you go, tell us where we can find all your stuff, and we'll let you plug all the things you want to plug.
Well, I guess at The Athletic, you can find me for sure. Probably the easiest way is at SportsSturm on Twitter, SportsSturm. And there I will beat you down with tweets about my various content on a regular basis, way more than anybody should ever tweet. I may have a social media addiction problem, but I'm working on it, and try not to judge. Otherwise, theticket.com is where you can find our radio stuff, but you know, you probably have better things to do there as well. But really fun having being on with you guys, and hopefully my answers weren't too cumbersome.
Oh, I enjoyed them a lot. I wouldn't have followed you if I didn't want a little bit more detailed answers on football questions myself. So
you got
consider me a football nerd too. So awesome. Thanks very much, and we'll let you go.
Anytime, guys.
All right. Thanks again to Bob Sturm for coming on the program and sharing some absolutely fantastic stuff. Obviously, it's always great when you get to pick the brain of somebody like that who really knows an industry like the NFL. But to hear his thoughts on writing and the way he handles his stuff, particularly first thing in the morning, I'm a morning writer too. I thought that was fantastic stuff. So thanks again to Rob for leading that interview and setting all that up. I'm sure our listeners really got a charge out of that. But right now we break into halftime, which is once again where we pay the bills and thank our sponsor. That would be ChrisKennedyPublishing.com. As mentioned at the top, doesn't matter what you're into, man. If it's Mil SF, if it's space opera, if it's fantasy, if it's craft, they have got you covered over at Chris Kennedy Publishing. This week we've got a new release, as they are wont to do. So Rob, I'm going to throw to you, man. What are we looking at this week? What's the big title?
Well, the big title this week is Eye of the Storm, and it's another one of the it's another Four Horsemen universe. This one is from Mark and Chris themselves, the big rock stars that started this all off. This is book 11 in the Guild Wars. It's hard to fight when you don't know who is the enemy. The Deucemen offered to let humanity become their servitors, but the leaders of Earth's Four Horsemen were unified in their decision. Thanks, but no thanks. With the Deucemen returning in strength, though, and steadily growing their influence and armed presence, humanity finds itself in a difficult place. The Guild War continues to rage, with planets becoming increasingly desperate for non-existent help, while the Mercenary Guild continues to sit on its hands, despite Nigel Serrazi's attempts to break the deadlock. However, events have transpired in the galaxy which have, once again, forced humanity into the center of the storm. We have been deemed a danger, and thus a target for neutralization. But not by the Mercenary Guild this time. Instead, we're in the crosshairs of the Science Guild, as our technological innovation cannot be allowed to continue unchecked. Deadly plots have been unleashed not only to cripple Earth, but to assassinate Alexis Cromwell and her winged hussars, humanity's only reliable space navy. And even if Alexis survived, that's only the start of the Science Guild's plan to turn Earth's people against themselves. As the galaxy continues to splinter, there may not be any option but to take the fight to the Science Guild. The Guild Wars aren't over. This is only the Eye of the Storm.
Oh, reviews are coming in for this one already, too, and they're sounding good. Kevin, what do you got for me on that front, man?
Well, Sean writes, the story has a nice pace, contains great action sequences with light humor sprinkled throughout the novel. Kennedy and Wandry have crafted a very entertaining series that makes me wonder where the story is going and what surprises are in store in future books. Ray says, always a pleasure to read the authors Kennedy and Wandry. My only complaint, they don't write fast enough. Eye of the Storm is a great addition to the Four Worlds universe. Julie says, this book started fast and grabbed my attention from the first page. It has little threads from previous stories that tie it together. Great story, many possibilities, and keeps your interest. It also has huge amounts of mecha, alien battles, super tech, and lots of heroic beats. Great read.
Nice. Well, lots of other stuff obviously happening around CKP. First and foremost, we've got a book for pre-order this week, and that is going to be the fourth novel in the new Hit World universe from John E. Sears. This one is titled The Dragon of Styx. I'm hearing fantastic stuff about this series. Like, I'm seriously counting down until these hit audio so I can check them out. Speaking of audio, we have a pre-order for that as well, and that is going to be another Four Horsemen universe novel, this one being These Things We Do, from Casey Morse. Sorry, getting him confused with Casey as well. The book actually arrives on June 1, but as mentioned, you can pre-order the audiobook now. So those are always fantastic. The crew they have lined up to do their audio productions always does a great job with the 4-HU stuff. And then finally, sale of the week would be Hide the Lightning from our very own Kevin Steverson. That is book one of the Coalition series from his Salvage Universe. Quick question, just to satisfy my own curiosity. Hide the Lightning, are you channeling a little Metallica there? Is that what I'm getting?
I love Metallica and I listened to them while I was writing it. But if you're familiar with the Salvage series, part of their special forces, for lack of a better term, is a group called the Bolts. They used to be a gang and then they had the military training. But their unique unit identification is not a patch. One half of their face has lightning tattooed, and the lightning itself is powered by the body's own electricity, so it flashes and moves. And then that's where it comes from, hiding the lightning. Because when they climb in a mech or when they put on their battle helmet, they have to turn it off.
Gotcha.
In order to be able to see the screen and everything else. Otherwise, the light would be flashing and have a mirror effect.
Nice.
So Hide the Lightning comes from that.
Nice. Learn something new every day. Well, as noted before, if you got questions about Chris Kennedy Publishing, you can find everything you need to know about them, from their books to their authors to upcoming events like the Fantasy Convention, happening later on this month. That's all available via their website at chriskennedypublishing.com. You can also follow CKP on Facebook with two of their groups, the 4-HU Merc Guild and CKP The Factory Floor. And then finally, one little thing I do want to mention for the Patreon subscribers for CKP. Expect a little something special coming down the pike here in the very near future. Been working with Chris on some things to throw you guys a nice little nugget. And not sure when he's planning on rolling that out, but we're having some fun with it, and you can expect that to be coming down the pike here shortly. So again, that's for CKP Patreon subscribers.
Can I throw in a little admin note real quick?
Yeah, man.
You mentioned that the novels that are for pre-sale. When it's a novel for pre-sale, you got to get that straight through CKP Publishing. It's not necessarily pre-sale on Amazon at this time.
Correct.
It's from Chris Kennedy himself.
Yep. Thank you for clarifying on that. A lot of folks want a way to go straight through their publisher for a lot of different reasons. And so this is a new thing that CKP is offering to be able to offer that to their customers. So if you want that, if you want the opportunity just to go straight through the press themselves, then you can do that. And it doesn't matter if you're looking for a Mobi file for Kindle or an EPUB for Nook or Kobo, they can cover it all for you. And you're going to get it days before it ever drops on all the other platforms. So that's pretty super stuff there. But again, everything you need to know, ChrisKennedyPublishing.com. Chris Kennedy Publishing, it is message-free sci-fi with a slice of fantasy. Now it's time to head into some listener mail. So let's do this.
You got mail.
Okay, got some good questions on tap this week from our Facebook group. That is, of course, the Dudes in Hyperspace. And also through email, which you can email the show if you've got a question for us. Shocker, dudesinhyperspace@gmail.com. Before I jump into that, though, guys, I did want to throw you an opportunity to weigh in on your teams very quickly from the NFL draft. That's something that we obviously care a lot about. Everybody's very passionate about not only the league, but their teams. Kevin, I'll let you lead off, man. What'd you think about your Falcons? Much was made about the Pitts draft pick. Were you on board with that? Did you want a
Absolutely.
Quarterback? What did you want there?
No, I think Ryan's going to have years in him like Breeze had and like what's his name for that team down in Tampa. Anyhow.
Super Bowl champion. That's what you can call him.
No, I liked Atlanta's draft. As a matter of fact, it's not just me. NFL.com said Atlanta had the best draft. So, you know, there's a little something backing me up. But, you know, we got Kyle Pitts. We got offensive line. We got a safety, two corners. We really need to work on the defense. That was good. We had 9 picks in 6 rounds, and 5 were defense. So, I like that.
All right, nice.
And so we'll see what happens.
Rob, Cowboys, what do you give them?
So here's the weird thing about the Cowboys draft. If you take it in the order that they got taken, there are a lot of people that are saying they could have picked a number of these players later, like Chauncey Golston. You probably could have gotten him later. But interestingly enough, if you take them sort of in their expected order from pre-draft, you put Jabril Cox in that first pick in the 3rd round, and suddenly everything knock everything down around. Suddenly, all of those picks seem to match, and it's one of the things that we tend to forget about sometimes, especially in the middle of the draft, is that it's the whole of the draft that really matters. And I'm quite pleased with the whole of this draft. The Cowboys didn't get a safety. It's their one thing that they haven't gotten in a few years. But honestly, every time there was a chance to get a safety, I understood why they went in another direction. And they got the top flight cornerback. I think Kelvin Joseph can be that guy. His only question is whether or not how much he wants to pursue a rap career. That's a legitimate question, but I think the dude can play. And they got some other defensive backs as well. They've got that plug in the middle that Bob talked about, Quentin Bohannon, and they got a couple of other offensive linemen defensive linemen that I really like. So I think that overall, this is going to make the Cowboys a much stronger defense, and they needed it, because they've had some real problems there last year. 8 picks went to the defense. I doubt all 8 stick. But if 4 or 5 of those players stick and become quality contributors, then you've had a heck of a talent infusion on a draft. So I'm quite pleased.
Yep. All righty. Well, it's fitting that we let off the conversation talking about weather and food, because our first listener mail question, pod mail, if you will, comes from Natalie. There are 4 main categories of American barbecue: Carolina, Kansas City, Memphis, and Texas. With you guys coming from various parts of the country, what say you on your favorites?
I am not a fan of the vinegar base out of the Carolinas. I'm sorry. It's too runny for me.
Right.
I like a thicker barbecue that's more Kansas style.
Okay.
I come from, I used to live down in Columbus, Georgia area, and it's not necessarily national. It's a regional kind of thing, but it's more closer to the Kansas City kind of thing.
Okay. Rob?
So I'm right there with him on the – I'm not a big fan of the Carolina barbecue style, the vinegar style. But I'll be honest, I really don't care about the sauce. To me, it's whether or not you cook the meat well. And for my tastes, the more traditional mesquite grilling and cooking of Texas is probably my favorite. But it's followed closely by Kansas City and some of the things that they've created, like the burnt ends that came from this area. Burnt ends are my favorite straight barbecue out there, because they're just fantastic. But honestly, if the meat has to have a sauce, like, to make it good, then it's not good barbecue. The meat should stand on its own.
That's fair, although I will throw a shout out to Carolina, not because I live here, but because I do like it, and I've really enjoyed it since I moved here from Florida, which over 10 years ago now, which is still hard to believe. Yeah, man. I mean, sitting in a ball field with a big old Carolina barbecue sandwich just cooked right. And Rob hit on something there. I mean, it all starts with the pork. It's got to be smoked well. It's got to be juicy. It's got to have the right amount of smoke on it that's enough to make the hit, but not enough to just overpower anything else you have there. Put that on a big old Kaiser roll with a pile of sauce, and then top it off with a big pile of sweet coleslaw to cut the vinegar in the sandwich. Son, that's a good way to spend a day with a beverage in a ball field. All right, next question comes from Rashad. Last week I started reading Salvage Title after listening to you guys' first episode together, and I've got to tell you, I'm already in love with these characters, although me personally, they strike me as a crew that the author knows well. Are these real-life characters? Kevin Steverson, what say you?
Harmon Tarbell
and Company.
a lot of them are combinations of people that I've known in my lifetime. And I spent 21 years in the military, so I've seen all kinds. I will tell you this, and they don't mind if I tell anybody, but Mike Melton and Mike Bradford of Mike and Mike's are real people. That is their real personalities, and that is exactly how they act. True story. One day I will bring them to a con in their uniforms, and when people look and then look at them, they'll be amazed because that's them to a T.
Nice. All right, next question.
This just in. Kevin knows a lot of characters. Raise your hand if you're shocked.
That's a true story. All right, next question comes from Logan. Just finished watching The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and I've got to say I'm still on the fence about what I think. Did you guys have a chance to catch the series, and if so, what were your thoughts? I've watched it. I wrapped it, I guess, like a week or so. Has anybody else had a chance to catch this one?
I have not.
Okay.
I have not. I'm not a huge comic book guy. I went and watched some of the Marvel movies. But a lot of times I go to these movies and I'm like, who is that? And my friends are like, shut up. So I'm not the right guy to talk about Falcon and Winter Soldier.
All righty. Well, I'll weigh in on it. I gave it a C. I've always been a huge fan of these two actors. I think Anthony Mackie was the perfect cast for Falcon. I also think Sebastian Stan is a fantastic Winter Soldier / Bucky Barnes. A lot of fans online are kind of clamoring for him to play a young Luke Skywalker if they're actually going to put that character into live action in The Mandalorian with something other than kind of like the CGI redo like they've done with other characters. I think that would be a great call on Disney's part. As for the show itself, listen, man, I mean, there's just no way around it. It's the most politically charged story Marvel has put out so far, period. It's not even close. And I'm just one of those people that I'm purely exhausted with politics permeating every aspect of my life. And because of that, I just didn't enjoy the story as much as a lot of people did. I also didn't think that the villain organization, Flag Smashers, I'm sure that came from a comic. I thought it was stupid. I didn't get their cause. I didn't really care, although I know where it came from. And I thought the actress who portrayed the kind of the leader of this, I don't know if you call him a terrorist sect or whatever, was quite possibly the most forgettable villain since Thor Lost World. So, I felt like it had a lot of strikes going against it for me personally, but I mean, there were some things that make it worth watching, namely those two actors, because when you have them on screen together, it's got a very Lethal Weapon kind of vibe, a la Murtaugh and Riggs, Mel Gibson, Danny Glover, and you can never go wrong with that combination on screen, particularly when you got good actors, and they are that. So anyway, that was my take on Winter Soldier. I'm going to give it a C for that, and frankly, I'm taking a break on Marvel for a while. I'll give Loki a shot, but other than that, I'm tired of it. Next question comes to us from Clay. Now that the NFL draft is behind us, what do you guys go to for sports entertainment during the off season?
We've got a little bit more of the English Premier League to go, so that's one of the things I'll be watching is Manchester United holding on to that second spot and hopefully defeating Roma on Thursday and advancing to the Europa League final. It's not the best title in the world. It's not the best competition in the world. But the only thing that sort of held Ole Gunnar Solskjaer back is the fact that they've not won any trophies at all. And to a certain extent, I think those things sort of come in bunches. So getting one, even if it's not the most important one, might very well springboard this team in future years. So that's what I'm watching.
All righty. Kevin Robb's watching the soccer, man. What are you watching?
Baseball. Always the baseball.
Nice.
But I say watching. I'm one of those guys. I prefer old school to listen.
Yeah.
I have a transistor radio that's 35 years old right behind me on the counter, and I listen.
Nice. Yeah, I'm a fan of the MLB at Bat app for that very same reason. $20 gets you the live stream of every major league broadcast for the entire regular season and the postseason. So if I'm listening to the Reds versus the Cubs, and let's say I want to switch over from Tommy Thrall and hear what the other side of the tracks are saying about that same game, I can go right there to the Chicago live stream, and it's there. $20. That's a lot of value.
I'm just a homer, so.
I hear you. Well, thanks to everybody who submitted questions. One more time, if you want to send us a question for future shows, we love hearing from you guys. You can follow Shark Flight Media on Facebook and Twitter at Shark Flight. Very simple to find. If you want to tweet at us, make sure you use the hashtag Dudes in Hyperspace. You can also email the show at dudesinhyperspace@gmail.com and be sure to come find us via our Facebook group. Well, I think that's going to take us down to the end of the show, which, as we all know, means white flag. So here we go.
White flag.
White flag is that segment where we tell listeners kind of what's on our radar coming up in the next few days and weeks. Can be book stuff, writing stuff, can be television and sports stuff. Pretty much anything we decide we want it to be. So, Kevin, I'll give you first dibs on this, man. What you working on the next couple of weeks?
I'm still working on that novel with Casey Zell. It's a salvage novel with Anna Cameron Yang. So we should finish that up here in the next couple of weeks. But that's what I'm working on. And I'm looking forward to Fantasy coming up. That's the first con of the year for me.
Yep.
Up there in your neck of the woods. So I'm hoping the weather stays good there.
Yep. Yeah, I think our next episode, we are going to try and get one of the staff from Fantasy on to kind of do a little bit of a con preview. And then, folks, stay tuned because we're going to have some content coming to you straight from the con at the end of this month. So a lot of fun stuff happening there. Rob, what's on your radar, man? What you got going on in the next few days and weeks?
Well, I have to echo Kevin and you about Fantasy. We're going to be releasing Responsibility of the Crown there. This is a novel by G. Scott Huggins, who is an amazing writer. I think you guys are going to love this novel. And this will be the first novel that I've done as publisher, so I'm really excited to, you know, be a part of this whole project, and I can't wait till you guys see it. So Fantasy is definitely on my radar. I also am starting to work on some short stories myself. I was working on one for one project, but I have something new that's popped up. Can't really talk about either yet, but I am quite pleased because over the next couple of months, I'm going to be able to send out a couple new short stories that I think are going to be quite fun. So writing, I get to see my family this week, get my mom and my new stepfather. I get the chance to hang out with them this weekend, so I'm really looking forward to that too.
Nice. Yep. On the writing front, I've got a short story I'm looking to get into the can. I meant to have that done by this past weekend, but my travel down to Florida kind of put a little bit of a hinder on that. Thank you, American Airlines, for just absolutely sucking at what you do. That's a long story for a different day, which I'm not going to tell on these airwaves because people don't care, but just take it from me. That's a crappy airline. In other news, things that I'm looking forward to are NASCAR at Darlington this weekend. That's always a great track and a fun event, particularly when they do the throwback thing, which is this weekend. And then finally, guy I've loved since I was a kid, man, Travis Tritt. I grew up with him in the 90s. My man's putting out his first studio album in like 14 years. Called Set in Stone, and I believe that drops here on May 7th. Title track, or first track off of it's a song called Smoke in a Bar, which I heard him perform at the Grand Ole Opry live stream, and really, really cool tune, man. So always fun to get new stuff from Travis Tritt. Well, thanks again to Bob Sturm from The Athletic and The Ticket in Dallas for coming on and talking a little NFL draft and writing with us. Thanks also to Kevin Steverson, Rob Howell for tagging along on this, and particularly for Rob for leading that interview. Did a great job. And finally, thanks to our sponsors, Chris Kennedy Publishing. One more time, if you've got questions, you want to find some books, they got them for you. ChrisKennedyPublishing.com. You can also find them on Facebook and the old social media machines. In the meantime, if you love this podcast, we love it when you leave reviews. So please do so. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, wherever it is you listen, wherever it is you subscribe. If they will let you leave stars, we would greatly appreciate it if you would do that with a review. Helps us out a lot, gets us up through the algorithms, and lets other people find this show who might not otherwise be looking for it. But on behalf of Rob Howe, Kevin Steverson, I am Ian J. Malone, and we will see you next time on the Dudes in Hyperspace podcast. See ya.